Okay, I want to welcome everyone to this evening's For Educational webinar featuring Dr. Stephen Cowan. And the topic for tonight is What's a Healthy Teen? These educational webinars are brought to you by the Traditional Chinese Medicine World Foundation, and it's part of an effort we're making to introduce people to speakers who are coming to the conference this fall, the Building Bridges of Integration Conference, that's happening October 13th through 16th in Reston, Virginia. The information for the conference is all on the tcmworld.org website, and our theme this year is Oneness, Consciousness, and Everyday Health. And all the webinars we've been doing have touched on this theme in one way or another. Particularly, we've been talking a lot about consciousness. Tonight we have Dr. Stephen Cowan, who is really like a member of our family. He's come many, many times year after year to present at the conference, and he's one of the most popular speakers, and I would say somebody who really gets it, a Western-trained pediatrician who completely integrates the understandings he has in his life from his Tai Chi practice and from his understanding of Chinese medicine and love of that tradition into his approach to his work with the children he's seen and the families he works with. So I'm really excited to have Dr. Cowan, who from now on I'm going to be calling Stephen, join us. And I know you're right here, Stephen, so we should say hello.
Hello to everyone out there.
Absolutely.
To my
welcome.
Friends at Building Bridges Community. Happy solstice to everybody.
That's right. That's right.
This was the strawberry moon, or also called the honeymoon.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really important, powerful one because it was a full moon solstice. Hasn't been one for 50 years.
That's right. We got to experience it.
I know. It's great.
Apparently, I experienced another one, but I don't remember it.
You do. You just don't remember that you remember it.
It's there somewhere, but it
wasn't
the
there.
First thing I thought of when I thought, oh, my gosh, it hasn't happened in,
uh-huh. You
know, 40-something years.
That's right.
So I'm going to jump in here and kind of give you some place you might start. I think the topic is, you know, extraordinarily broad. What's a healthy teen? But I really want to ask you this. So what's different today in how you think about working with adolescents than it used to be when you started in your practice? Like, what is it you see now?
That's a great question.
That you didn't see then and you wish other people could see like you do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a wonderful jumping off point because it speaks to what's changed in me.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, we keep saying every generation, you know, oh, these kids aren't like when my day and all that stuff. And so before we start saying what's changed in kids today, I think when I first came out in practice, which is 30 years ago now, you know, teenagers were still more or less the same. I think the digital revolution hadn't happened yet. So kids weren't as plugged in. I mean, they were watching TV. But in those days, you know, there was the crack wars and it was all these other things. So there's always something. But in reframing your question, I've changed in my view of children. And I think that's a good place to start because it speaks to where we are in terms of education of children and medicine in children. So, you know, one of the things that I realize in myself over the years is that the old way I was trained as one of these stars of pediatrics, because, you know, what made me really good back in the day was that I could diagnose problems really fast. That was considered a skill, right? And everybody, you know, that's how you move up in the ladder. You know, I'm on rounds and I'm the first to diagnose what's wrong with somebody. And that's what I thought was healthcare. But that's not healthcare at all. That's illness care. There's nothing healthy about that. And so in the process of stepping out of the box, shall we say, over the years, mainly because of dissatisfaction with that form of caring for growing children, and mainly because I found it didn't work very well. It's good for emergencies when you need to make a diagnosis fast. Emergency medicine, American emergency medicine, you know, is wonderful. It's probably the best in the world in emergencies. But applying that to a growing child or to a chronic problem, it's simply ineffective. You're using the wrong tool for the problem. And so reframing the whole thing and saying what's right with a child, and even better, forget right and wrong altogether, throw that all out and say what's the process that's unfolding, as opposed to me being someone who's supposed to fix something, was a hugely liberating moment for me, because it allowed me to then connect heart to heart with the child, the mother, the father, the caregiver, the grandparents, the context, the whole ecology of this experience. And it became a much more effective way of encountering people, encountering the world. And problems were not the big issue. The fun of it was that solutions kind of tumble out when you approach anything like that. First, connect heart to heart, then check out what people are feeling, you know, and then understand what they're asking for, and then from there, solutions just kind of tumble out on their own. And in Chinese, we call it zuran. Zuran means sort of itself or spontaneously, that the things, this is a kind of honoring of the emergent qualities that take place when you're in a treatment room or on the subway, wherever, where you're allowing yourself to connect specifically to heart instead of mind games, which is the way I was trained as a doctor. So that changed in me, and then I started seeing adolescence, which is this very dramatic time, in a completely new light.
How was that? How was it new?
It's new in the sense that it is kind of a miracle. Adolescence, first of all, didn't take place 100 years ago. The word wasn't really used for this segment of our lives. You know, it was really began to be used around World War II, where they started defining adolescence as a specific developmental stage. I always wonder, you know, what are the problems that we encounter in kids during this time? Because I apply, you know, Chinese medicine models to this, we can all do this. This would be a kind of fun little experiment for all the listeners to do. Draw a circle like a clock. Have everybody draw a circle if you have a piece of paper. If not, imagine one. And in the circle, we have this kind of five-phase model that's based on the seasons, which is a process-driven model, a growth mindset model, right? That's based on the unfolding of the seasons. So at 7 o'clock, which is around the time we're talking now, that's the winter season, water element. We can write in there. And we're going to build this out as we talk in this hour. And then at 10 o'clock, we have the spring, which is the season we just moved out of, which is wood. So you write spring and wood. And then at 12 o'clock, we have summer, which is fire. And at 2 o'clock, we have harvest, what I call the harvest, bounty, ripening of fruit, which is earth. And then at 5 o'clock, we have autumn, the dying season, which is metal or gold. Lately, with children, I don't use the term metal anymore. The true translation, jin, is gold. And people respond to that term much more positively than metal, which sounds more like a gun or some steamship or something. Anyway, we've got this model that water feeds wood, wood feeds fire, fire feeds the earth, earth makes the gold, gold, top of a mountain brings the water. And it's interesting, we can use that in many different metaphors. Chinese medicine is all metaphoric. Western medicine is all kind of rigid, fixed mindset stuff. So changing the dynamics and understanding not just stages of child development, we can also talk about the story that's unfolding in a teenager as they move from, let's say, 7, which is when I feel we should start dealing with the teenager, if you want to call this a stage. We always want to be prepared. So at 7, we're changing our view of this child. It's like the first change, 7 to 14 and 14 to 21. And so, you know, there are, for these 5 phases, the story, which is a journey, which is a child's adventure moving out into the world from a seedling to birth to movement as a toddler to speaking into the world from their heart to then manifesting around 7 as a sense of self, right? This magnificent first stage is forming of the self. And then from 7 to 14, we go into this stage of kind of exploding that, expanding it way more, but we're moving right around the circle. And the way any basic elements of a story, this is what I'm writing my next book about, is a child development book that goes through teens, is, so water is who, is the question who. Who am I? Wood is where am I, or where am I going? It's about direction and movement. Fire is when am I? When am I going to be blank? When am I going to get blank? When am I? It's all about when. Earth is about how am I? How am I fitting in? How am I feeling? How am I, whatever, integrating this story? It's sort of the plot. And then metal or gold is why am I? And a deep spiritual sacred question that opens a can of worms. So kids around 7 move into this who am I stage, and you can connect these 5 questions, which every story has, the 5 elements of every story. It applies to you, Larry, it applies to me. We're constantly revolving around this. It's really a spiral that unfolds as we get larger and larger. You know, you could say that the purpose of adolescence is, you know, to leave home, to find our home, to return home, right? We're
you just went all over the place. You leave home, yeah. And then you find home, and then you return home.
Well, it's
home.
To find our way home, you could say. Mm-hmm. Because when we're born, you know, when I hold a newborn in my arms, I'm seeing a Buddha. I'm seeing an enlightened being. I'm holding them. I do a Qigong exercise with newborns for parents where I'm actually feeling the presence of a Buddha in my arms when they're swaddled and their little butt is up against my dantian, my belly, and I feel them expanding. They have no names, no labels, no consciousness of right and wrong, you and me, there and here. They're open beings, right? It's a very, very, very powerful and sacred thing for me to experience. And then they move out into the world. They start playing with their hands. They discover they can use their hands. They get agency. Then they start moving. They start crying. Mom responds. This is a kind of power. They're moving out into the world. And with that, other is born. And the loss of Buddhahood, right? It's in there, but we have to take our time now to find our way back to that open, wide open consciousness. And adolescence pushes it right up into your face. As parents, we are confronted with a dramatic shift, particularly around 13 or 14, where the energy, the chi energy of this need for spiritual expansion takes place. So let me speak more specifically, because all this high talk is going to go like, woo, woo. I can hear my daughter going, Dad, just talk real.
So, well, yes, and also I'm thinking, yeah, there aren't too many parents out there who would quickly say about their 13 or 14-year-old child who's probably just about ready to strangle.
Well, let's
like,
talk about that.
Wait, hang on, we will. But they would say about that that's a child heading towards a spiritual journey.
Demanding spiritual adventure. Mm-hmm. It's actually their need. Mm-hmm. You know, Marshall Rosenberg, the guy who wrote Nonviolent Communication, who's one of my heroes, is this, he says, really, basically, everything is please and thank you.
Uh-huh.
There's nothing else that people are really saying. We just have to hear it. So, like you said, when a mother or a father or a parent of a teenager who's ready to strangle their teenager, it sounds weird to be talking about spiritual journey, but let's reframe this for a second. Mm-hmm. So that little clock that we just made, the five-phase clock, let's frame it in terms of what parents are experiencing with their teenager, because we can use the same model for all of these things. It's really kind of a fun way to do this. So, okay, let's take, we want to connect to their heart. We don't want to think our way through adolescence with our child. It will never work. You'll lose every time if you try to use your mind to get through it. So you have to feel your way through it. This is really important. So, opening our heart to this incredible journey that this child is on, and we recognize we ask the question, well, what are they feeling? You know, my job as a pediatrician for every single person I meet is to get the parent, the caregiver, the sibling to see through the eyes of the child. That's really all my job is.
Well, now you sound like a psychotherapist. I understand that.
No. It's I'm not doing therapy. It's just simply to get them to see through another being's eyes to experience that. Because that understanding that comes from that helps, you know, the solutions sort of arrange themselves based on that simple connection. So let's look at the feelings of a teenager. So water. Okay, ready? The kid says, I'm feeling weird. I love it when they say that. How do you feel? I feel weird. Now, some of them will use it as a badge. I'm weird. And others will say, I'm weird. Nobody understands me. I'm feeling misunderstood. You don't get it, Mom. Right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of alienation of water, the water expression of feelings that comes from this who am I and who am I not,
right,
individuation process that's beginning to unfold actually around 7, but takes its peak around 13, 14. Who am I now? How am I different from my parents? Who am I, you know, this big who am I question has with it this weirdness. I'm weird. I'm different. Nobody gets me, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then that's the winter of their adolescence, metaphorically speaking. And we have to identify with that weirdness. We have to feel it. We have to honor it. We have to validate it before we try to fix anything. Because if we try to fix that, that's the road to psychopharmacology. Nobody should ever feel sad. Nobody should ever feel weird. And you lose the kid. And quite frankly, I'm seeing, if anything, in your first powerhouse question, the thing I'm seeing the most of is the medication, the medicalization of adolescence is the biggest change in the last 30 years. The use of psychopharmacology in teenagers has quadrupled in the last 10 years. So I'm feeling weird, you know, can send emergency messages to parents when they don't like the music the kid's listening to when he's trying to find himself. Music, you know, is a spiritual experience. And music is one of the most important things in a teenager's life. And so before you tell him to turn that down, listen to it. So listening, which is the ear, is how water opens its heart. Let me say that again. Listening is the sense of the kidney, which is part of the water network in Chinese medicine. So listening is how water opens its heart to the world. So we have to listen to our children. We have to pause. The winter is the pause. Press the pause button. With little kids, I give them these little pause buttons now, which is, you know, if you want someone to stop doing something, pause yourself, right? So I'm now giving them to parents, you know, pause and breathe out, pause and breathe, pause and listen,
right?
But listen to the music. That's a spiritual experience, whether it's rap, which can be very intense, very aggressive, very misogynistic, but we have to listen. I find that when I know the music that a child's listening to and I say, oh, I know that band, they go, you do? My mother doesn't like that music. But now we've bonded. We've met heart to heart for a second. I've honored what's incredibly important for them in their exploration of who am I. Right?
Right. That's great.
And so this is, I'm feeling weird. I'm feeling misunderstood. I'm looking for some other teacher, right? We've all, you know, found teachers when we're ready to find them. Adolescence is the moment, you know, 500 years ago, it was the time to find your apprentice, your apprenticeship, to find the master you were going to work with. Now we wait till we're 30 or 40 when we have a spiritual crisis, and then we have to go find, you know, Master Lu or somebody, a teacher, because we're, you know, but we've waited way too long. In ancient times, you started much earlier. In ancient times, they didn't talk about individuation. It was a time to spiritually expand yourself, to go deeper, to dig deep. This is all water. Listening with all your heart to your child before you correct them, before you judge them, before you criticize them, before you point fingers. It's just listen. What are they asking for? And then we move to wood. And wood, springtime, which is about movement, which is about looking. The eye opens, is how wood opens its heart through the eye. And so looking, observing without judgment, just observing, like open-hearted observing, the way the baby is looking at me when I'm holding that little baby in my arms, look at your 13-year-old. No judgment, just observing with love, right? Just observing. And what are they saying? What's the woody thing? They're pushing back. Wood is pushing. It's force. It's muscle. It's the stem pushing through the ground, spring. So it's all this pushback, this aggressive talking back to the parents. And now the parents are insulted. And then they react. And now you've got two barking dogs, because that's contagious. If you want your kid not to talk back to you, then why are you talking back to them? So wood is about how to deal with the branching out pressure that a child feels, that they're confined, the constraint they're feeling. Stop boxing me in. Stop telling me what to do. right? That's what they're complaining about. Let me do it my way, which is about how humans learn. Humans learn by trial and error, not trial and success. They learn by trial and error. They need to make mistakes and not be judged for it. So Wood is pushing back often when they're feeling judged and they're humiliated and they're feeling shamed and their pride is hurt, because they're developing a pride. It's what they're supposed to be doing, is developing a sense of this, who am I is about where, is now emerging into where am I going, finding my direction, setting my goals. And when they're being told what to do constantly in school, being judged in school, right, by what's right, what's wrong, who got the better grade, who's the smart one, who's the dumb one, right, they feel threatened and they're going to push back. Now in Tai Chi, we learn how to encounter someone who's pushing. You do not meet force with force. You lose every time. And Tai Chi parenting is learning how to use their profound energy of growth, because it's all about growth, expanding themselves, to use it to guide them, not to stop them. This same picture that we have of the circle that we've drawn is really the way the mind, the nervous system grows, right? So we have the soil, we have the roots, we have the stems branching out, we have the leaves breathing air, and we have the sun warming it. Those are the five elements. And we want the neocortical connections to take place, which is the big mind, which allows them to think about the big picture, which is the spiritual journey that we're here for, which is to expand ourselves to become whole, not just parts. But in adolescence, they're feeling like they're just parts. They've grown to a point where they've been told so many times who they are. You're good in basketball. You're terrible in math. You're handsome. You're ugly. You're fat. You're short. All this stuff that's defined them, they're now expanding beyond that. They're pushing back in this aspect of adolescence. And understanding how to encounter that smartly, wisely, with compassion for the feelings of constraint, and honoring those feelings of constraint, honoring them, meeting their push with an embrace rather than a pushback, is dealing with the intense energy of springtime, of Wood energy, that is in every adolescent. Because now we're in this hormonal drive, this muscular.
I just want to ask you something, if you don't mind, about, let's say, a child who's coming in to see you, and you have this framework in mind, and you understand the possibility that what you're seeing is maybe some state of imbalance around, let's say, this Wood spring quality. How might you expect, or how might you see a child presenting who shows that? Like, would there be certain physical problems, or
It could be.
Emotional
issues? Headache.
How would you notice
So there are many. So there's body, mind, and spirit. You're going to see it in all three levels. So in the body, you'll see muscle spasms, you'll see migraine headaches, you'll see tension headaches. You feel their neck and you'll see it immediately. Touch their neck and they go, ow! They're holding it all right there, right between, their sternocleidomastoid muscle that goes down from their neck to their shoulder. They're holding the weight of the world. That's where they feel it in their physical body. You can ask them, are you stressed out? Yeah, I'm really stressed out. Where do you feel it? Where's the stress? Where do you feel it? This is exactly what I do with every kid. And then they show me where. Sometimes it's in their heart. Sometimes it's in their stomach. Sometimes it's in their head, you know, or in their neck. And what does it feel like? Describe it to me. Does it have a color? Does it have a shape? Does it have a pulse? What, you know, describe it to me. Really get into it, right? Let's go there. And what do you think that feeling is asking for? You know, there is, feelings are just requests of the body. And the same goes with emotions. I'm really pissed off. I'm really angry at my mom. She never lets me go out. She never lets me hang out with my friends. You know, so the anger now is coming from the heart. We call it anger, which is more of a kind of diagnosis. And I'm not in the business of diagnosing anymore. I can do that. I'm trained to do that. That's what parents expect. But the first thing I tell them is, I'm not here to fix your kid. That's emergency medicine. I want emergency empathy first. Let's connect first, and then we'll see what solutions come up. Otherwise, I'm giving them protocols, and that's never going to work. It's never going to be customized enough. It's never going to fit the ecology of their context. And I get, you know, it's 10% success rate. If I do it my way now, it's much more, you know, it's like 90% success rate, because it's so customized to their local community ecology. Because now we're meeting first, and then we're deciding. We're not diagnosing and treating, right? So if we get to the heart level, they say, I'm really, you know, I'm depressed. Or, you know, I'm angry. These are diagnoses. And I want them to really describe their feelings, what it's directed at, what's the shape, you know, when does it emerge, what's the timing, you know, where is it directed to, you know, how, you know, what makes it feel better. I want to explore it and feel it before I treat anything. And then the spirit of it is, well, what is it trying to accomplish? A very great hero of mine, who actually taught at Building Bridges many, many years ago. My first year there had to be, I don't know, 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. Leon Hammer said, yeah. Has always asked, what is the symptom trying to accomplish, and how can we help it? Mm-hmm. So if you know, what is the anger directed at, and how can we help it accomplish its goal? Now, when a kid says, I want to beat the crap out of my brother, we can't allow, well, let's help him beat the crap out of his brother. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, well, what is that energy trying to accomplish for him? You know, I just did this yesterday with a patient, you know, who's basically bullying his brother. His mother is a psychotherapist, and she's driving her crazy because it's so, feels so unkind, and he used to be such a sweet, kind kid.
Also against her values, you know, like we're all about.
Against her values, breaking her heart.
And, right.
Well, and now scary psychopathology is coming into her head. What's wrong with my kid? Right? And instead of reframing and saying, well, just, you know, let's talk it through. In fact, because of the basketball game this week, I framed it in terms of LeBron James. Mm-hmm. And I used that as a model because the kid was a basketball player and he could relate to that. And I said, let's say you were playing basketball with LeBron James and you stepped out of bounds. And he came over and started yelling at you, which is what he's doing to his brother. And, you know, he immediately got it. He said, boy, that would be really not nice of him. And I said, yeah, and what do you really want? What would you really want LeBron James to do? And he said, well, I want him, you know, he's my hero. I want him to kind of make me feel better and show me, you know, a better way to do it maybe, or. And so I said, well, that's just what your brother's asking for you. So why are you asking, you know, acting like such a boss? You know, you're his role model. So it was a really way of unpacking the anger, the energy of it, which is just healthy energy to expand and branch out and push boundaries and push buttons and trial and error and explore. But it's being reframed in a way that's pathological and negative, and then they start owning it that way. They start believing it that way. I'm just a bad kid, you know, because they get all this negative feedback for it. It doesn't go anywhere. It's a kind of, it's a qualitative insecurity that's not being met with love. It's being met with judgment.
Well, you know, it's one of the things that you're identifying is if the problem is seen as outside, then, you know, there's all kinds of fixes people are going to want to do.
Correct.
And what you're teaching your patients to do is to stop, and through their dialogue with you, you're helping them to pay attention to themselves. Like,
exactly.
Start to learn the skill of looking at yourself, understanding
your own
body.
Yeah, not pointing fingers
body.
At anybody else. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly right. And so because this becomes, and I'm doing the same thing, by the way, with parents, because it's their spiritual practice. Remember that I feel very strongly, and I've said this in many workshops at Building Bridges, and I'm sure I'll say it again this coming fall, that children are spiritual teachers that are here to teach us, you know, to show us what we need to work on in ourselves. We are not here to teach them a lesson. We're not even here to show them our wisdom. We are simply here to be present for them in the process of them expanding and help guide them to wholeness, right, within themselves. But in doing so, the first step is for us to practice what we preach, to expand ourselves first. So just as you said, quite exactly, you know, I'm asking kids to, you know, open up and work on what's inside. I'm asking parents to do that. Actually, they have to do it first. You can't, you know, the perfect example is a general rule in my practice now that I've left my PEDS practice and I'm just doing consulting, is that the first visit is with the parents only, no kid. Because, A, I don't want to talk about kids in front of kids, especially teenagers. And, B, this is about what they're going through, their process of expanding their consciousness, right? This is what, you know, the question I often ask parents is, are you a grower or are you a fixer? Are you here to grow your child, or are you here to fix your child? And that changes everything. It changes the framework. Growing implies exactly, Larry, what you're saying, which is when you're growing a plant, the plant knows what to do. You just arrange the ecology, and it'll take care of itself. You're not really doing anything. You're supporting, but you're not forcing or coercing. You don't coerce a plant to make its flower. That's really not cool. I mean, it can be done, but quite frankly, that's not the way I garden. Right? It's like the... Anyway, so the spiritual practice is for the parents to open their heart to what they're going through, what they're feeling, what they're needing, making sure they understand what the child's requesting, what they're going through, what's the process. So we talked about two. I'm weird, and I'm pushing back. Don't tell me what to do. Right? Let's keep moving around the clock, because
Wait a second. I want to go there, too, but I just want to say that you are, you know, you're taking for granted something that I hear, and I want to just comment on, and that is you know how to do this. I mean, you're not asking this child or these parents to do something you don't already know how to do. So you're walking your talk. So it's
but
real
I don't
want
to sound like I know what I'm doing.
No, it's not about how actually, you. It's not about what you're saying. It's not what you say. It's in you.
Yeah.
So you carry this with you. This is your practice. So
this has been my adolescence.
Yeah,
it's the story of my life. You know, how do you move through adolescence? You know, I know an awful lot of grown-ups are still adolescents. And quite frankly, our culture sort of thinks that's great. to stop halfway.
Right. Halfway to
you
where?
Know, I mean, everything is about staying like a teenager. Uh-huh. You get facelifts, you dress like a teenager, you know, it's all about, you know, stopping the process.
Uh-huh.
As if getting experienced and sagely is a problem. So, you know, I think what you're saying, I understand the way you're saying it. I've walked the walk, you could say.
It's real for you.
But it's important not to confuse that with, you know, the button that I wear, which is IDKY. IDKY. I give it out at workshops. I don't know yet.
Mm-hmm.
Which is staying curious. And not pretending to know what's going on. Because you're dead in the water if you do that. You miss what's going on. As you're saying what's going on, you miss what's going on. You can narrate the process, but if you fix it in time and space, that's not what you're talking about. You're talking about, you know, how does one... Look, I've seen thousands and thousands of kids. And so, yeah, you know, and in my own practice, you know, I think what you're touching on, which is a sidebar, but I think it's an important one, or else you wouldn't have brought it up, is this. Very important moment in my life happened many, 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 many years ago that broke me out. I mean, there was many of them, but there was one moment where I had been doing Qigong and Tai Chi. This is in 1990, and I was the medical director of the Asthmatic Children's Foundation, and I had all these, you know, teenage kids, city kids, poor kids, who had bad asthma, that they were stuck in the hospital, and diabetes, and obesity, and all kinds of chronic disorders, and they couldn't get out of the hospitals. They were going from one ER to the next, and so I brought them up to the country in this program and lived with them, you know, in a skilled nursing facility, minimum stay 6 months. And in the mornings, you know, I do my Tai Chi practice, so I was like, well, you know, let me do that with them. And it was this moment, and I think it touches upon your point, where it was this moment as a doctor where I stepped out of something that was a no-no. I did my own personal practice with my patients. I'd never done it before. It was my private thing. I never talked about it with anybody. I never recommended it. It was just my thing. And stepping out of that kind of liberated me. And more importantly, it would lead me to study Chinese medicine because all these kids, just doing these breathing exercises in the morning, all these kids stopped wheezing and got off all their meds, meds they had been on for years.
Wow.
That kind of blew my mind. I went
That's
running back
example.
To the doctors in the city and said, you're not going to believe this. And they didn't believe it.
Yeah.
They couldn't see it. And that made me realize, I got a little angry that I hadn't been told this was possible because I was told these were fragile kids that had, you know, what was called brittle diabetes
yes.
or brittle asthma, and they were always going to be on steroids. And it just, right before my eyes. So in a way, what you're talking about is evidence-based medicine in the most specific way of my own life.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's what you're yes. referring to.
Yeah. Yes, that is. There's another side of it which I wasn't thinking about your example per se, but of course there had to be one because you carry this with you. I'm really saying that, you know, your presence in these sessions you have with families and children in adolescence, your presence, you know how to do all the things that you're asking them to do. So you carry that with you. So you're you know, you're the quote-unquote master of this.
Well,
no, I'm not going there. I mean, in terms of, like, the skill
yeah,
set.
Yeah.
You know how to do what you're asking them to do.
Right. It's, you know, so let's say, you know, I'm teaching kids meditation.
Exactly.
Clearly, I've meditated for many, many years.
That's right.
And it's a very important part of my personal practice. And kids know that right away. You know, they feel it. You know, it's similar to when I was in med school and I had oral exams. And now when I do stuff like that, it's so obvious who knows their stuff and who doesn't, you know. But back then, you know, you think you're pulling the wool over on somebody's eyes,
yeah.
You know, the student
yeah.
thing. But it's so obvious. So it's holding the space in the room
mm-hmm.
with a kind of confidence that's not arrogance. Because arrogance will shut down. Arrogance is myopia. It's not mm-hmm. open to seeing anymore. So it's a very slippery slope, what you're talking about. It's an aside to what I'm here, but I think it's really important that we diverge on this, because how parents hold themselves in the room, they've all been teenagers. They're masters of teenagerhood. In the same way you're talking about me, mm-hmm. every single parent, in order to get to be a parent, had to have gone through teenagerhood. They couldn't pass that stage. They couldn't skip it. So they're masters of it. But they've forgotten. They've closed it off. It would be like me forgetting how to do Qigong and then recommending it to someone. It would be received differently than if it's part of my practice. So bringing the adolescents alive in parents who are masters of that, they have mastered it to get to be adults, and getting them to not speak down to the child, which brings us to fire, the third one, which is
Stephen,
all about dignity.
Stephen, wait one second. I just want to give you a heads up because of our time.
I know, I see it.
Because we're not going to make it all the way through the circle.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we don't. So everybody will have to come to the workshop.
Exactly,
I'm going to
my
do
point. That's okay. And please go ahead and continue
matter.
What you're going to do right
but,
now.
But
I know
what
we're
I want to talk about,
through.
And in fact, this would be the last thing we can talk about before we take any questions, is about dignity. About honoring dignity and having fun with your child. Fire is about fun. It's like chi dancing. It's about having fun in your connection.
Passion.
It's compassion, but more than compassion, it's fun.
No, passion. Passion.
Oh, it's passion, yes. And what's the child's passion and honoring that?
Mm-hmm.
And what's your passion? And talking about what your passion is. You know, I think that these things are contagious. And if parents manifest these things, if they can manifest it, you know, narrate how they messed up and laugh at themselves and talk about their anger at the dinner table without blame and without pointing fingers, but talk about the fear. If they could just do this, it dignifies them as human beings, and they set a role model for the child to do the same. It's a safe place for the child to feel safe enough and dignified enough to reveal themselves. There's so much hidden during teenagerhood now, so much shame and blame. So the dignity, I think, is a good place for us to end this, because it is one of the core features. Dignity and grace are these core features of what needs to be manifested to guide a child through the rocky road of teenagerhood. It's what they're asking for. And connection, heart connection.
It's where you started, you know, all about the heart and the,
that's
you know,
right.
really looking to recognize if our children are on a spiritual journey and we're on a spiritual journey, then we have to go to the heart.
And we have to do it together. Nobody goes alone. We go together. It's community, common unity. If our goal, if the premise is to become whole, which is how we return home, right, which is that baby, if that's the journey, is becoming whole, feeling, you're being told you're a part, and your journey and the angst of teenagerhood is trying, you know, is resenting that. And that resentment comes as the energy of trying to become whole. Then the only way we can do it is through heart. The only way we can do it is through the dignity of connection, expanding ourselves wide enough and all-encompassing enough to, you know, it's what Rumi says, right? There's a field beyond right and wrong. I'll meet you there.
You know, one of the things that's really beautiful, there's so many things you're saying to me are really beautiful. And one of them is that when you moved away from your traditional approach of looking at illness and seeing illness, and you embrace this other perspective where, you know, you don't
which
do that.
Which is choosing
anymore.
To see health.
Choosing to see development and growth,
mm-hmm.
and health.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That, you know, then when you connect with people this way, I feel it, you know, that the children, adolescents you see and their families are given permission to honor something in themselves. And
yeah.
this is big, and it's true, and it's universal.
And it's exciting.
And it's exciting.
It's a journey, right? You're saying, wow, it's amazing.
Yeah.
And some of my kids are very, very sick kids. You know, they're suffering. But
yeah.
The suffering is this journey of the heart asking. It's asking the Tao for direction.
Mm-hmm. Since it's a universal journey, then anybody who's involved in it can share their experiences together. And you know, to me, it's like, you know, what you said about community. Like, we're all in this, and this is why, like in the Eastern practices, you know, everybody has a community, the spiritual practice community, which maybe that's a sangha in certain, you know, types of practice, Buddhist practice,
right.
Or it's some kind of spiritual practice. And the exact opposite tends to happen in traditional way of thinking, where everybody gets more and more isolated.
That's right.
The bodies are broken down into specific parts, and you have to only
that's
worry
right.
about that, their left elbow and, you know, and their right
and
kidney.
And I think that the body resents that. And the resentment is what we call disease. Disease.
There you go.
Okay. So the body gets broken into parts. The child gets broken into parts in school, you know, math
yeah.
and science
yeah.
and English. The doctor divides everybody up, right? So, you know, the patient, it's patient-centered, so-called, but that breaks them from their community. You know, I lived in Italy and I had pneumonia once. I was so moved by this. I ended up in the hospital when I was in Italy. And they don't have hospital food there. Remember that food is a religion in Italy, right? And I remember I was lying there really miserable. I was a student. I was really miserable in the corner. And I watched this family bring in a checkerboard tablecloth, a bottle of wine, a whole home-cooked meal. And, of course, they invited me and some other poor soul over because how are you going to get better without community?
Uh-huh.
How are you going to heal without community?
Wow, so
we are ecologically connected. We are interdependent. So think of it this way. Adolescence is becoming, we spent the first 7 to 14 years becoming independent, and now we have the rest of our lives expanding to learn to become interdependent.
That's right.
Right? And that's what the crisis is. The resentment or the angst is that you've been told you're a part of the system, a part of the family. If you're a part of the family, you know, behave like, you know, grow up, you know, all that stuff, right? All that pointing fingers stuff. When I was your age, all those, that's violent language. And it creates just resentment because the spiritual urge, the health in the child, is asking for wholeness, is asking for connection, wholeness, community, all these language that is hardwired into us from our microbiome in our gut all the way up to the ecology of the land that we live on. It's all the same, right? You look at an old growth forest, the healthiest thing I know. And it's all about dying and living, all happening at the same time, and diversity, maximum diversity.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we've come a long way in our talk today, and I know there's more.
Lots more.
That was a subtle understatement.
infinitely more.
Infinitely more. And so it is true that if people are interested in learning more from you, well, they could read your book, Fire Child and Water Child.
I urge everyone who's listening, if you haven't been to a Building Bridges, please come because it's unique. I give, you know, teachings in all different venues, but nothing compares. I say this every time we meet. Nothing compares to the Building Bridges conferences because I think, just like you said earlier about me in the treatment room, because what makes it unique is it's run from bottom to top by practitioners.
Yeah,
whereas in other conferences, practice. You don't have that. And so there's this energy that's being worked on in the background all the time that makes it, you watch the arc, it starts out, different people come in, they don't know each other, they're sitting and they think it's like all other conferences. And by day two, they've coalesced, mm-hmm. which is another word I use. We have adolesce and then coalesce. Mm-hmm. That's the arc of life.
Mm-hmm.
First we adolesce. And then we coalesce.
So you did a great job of plugging the conference. I appreciate that very, very much.
It's very true.
It's
and
true,
I'm going
right?
to be talking about the developmental yeah. journey
yes.
in this particular coming up October conference in a way that I've never done before. So I think people, yeah. it's we touched upon it a little bit today. So there's more to come. Stay tuned.
Exactly. Tell
your friend.
I'm just going to remind people that the information about the conference is on the TCMworld.org website. And for people, people are listening live to our call, and there are some people here this later. So those of you who are hearing it later, you can act as if you're hearing it live for the first time, and we're present with you, and that's wonderful. And, you know, please consider joining us at the conference. So I just want to thank you again for making time to be part of this conversation and, you know, sharing yourself. I think the things you shared both on the intellectual side, but your personal stories were really touching and you know, really can help people who are facing, you know, real suffering, real trouble. And another way of thinking about it, you know. It you don't have to be trapped just in illness. There's another opening.
Right. You don't have to be defined by illness.
That's right.
Right?
Stephen, this is Elaine.
Hi.
As a mom and as a grandmother and just as a practitioner, somebody who deals with the community all the time, I'm really taken by the one phrase that you said of pause and breathe.
Right.
Because oftentimes parents are just so fearful. They yeah. love their children so much, they want a result. And I think that concept of just pause and
mm-hmm.
breathe is so valuable.
Well,
so
I'm
going
to bring a bunch of pause buttons to the conference to hand out to everybody.
That'd be wonderful. And I know that a lot of folks had questions for you, and we don't have the time for it, but I would like to tell our listeners that we have a blog post that Dr. Cowan has contributed to many times, so you may want to check that out and read that. And Dr. Cowan also has a Facebook page where you can go and possibly ask your questions. And
sure.
That would be
sure.
great.
And you, or you,
thank
and
you.
You, yeah. Or they can email me at drstephencowan@gmail.com.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry. You know, I knew that was going to happen because once Larry and I get on a roll, you know, we need to put 4 hours for this talk, and then
that's
maybe
right.
we'll get someplace.
You're too interesting, too great.
Well, half of the time we spend just drinking tea, though, you know, just to be quiet and, you know, that's let it steep and
well,
and
that's true.
And ripen.
That's true. Anyway, it's a real pleasure and an honor to be asked back and to be asked to do this. And I really mean that from the bottom, middle, and top of my heart.
Oh, you're beautiful.
It's lovely.
Thank you so much.
Well, I think we'll close here and encourage people to keep an eye on the blog for potentially other interesting webinars or other interesting learning opportunities. And, you know, spread the word if you're excited about this. This is what we are excited about. And this conference about oneness, consciousness, and everyday health is very much on the topic of what we're addressing here. And so encourage everyone.
Yeah, we hit upon all three of those briefly today even.
That's right. All right, well, good night, everybody. Thank you again, Stephen. Elaine, have a good night.
Good night,
Thank
all.
Thank you so much, gentlemen. Bye-bye.
Happy summer.
Mm-hmm. Thank
Bye-bye.
You, too.
Bye.